Welcome everyone to another episode of Coffee and Whiteboard Markers. I'm joined by my co-host Jody Epia.
How are you?
I'm Miles O'Kane and we look forward to taking you along for the ride. My man, week one of an 11-week term. Let's get straight into it. The positives and things we need to improve on for me. I'll jump in front for a change. Getting in contact with parents, I was better this week. One thing I need to improve on is some students more academic ability or more academic capable. I need to push a bit harder. Sometimes this week, I know it's only the first week, I might be doing too high of an expectation, but I need to challenge all students to their level, I believe.
I'll jump on that one with making phone calls to parents. It's always a good one, always a good positive, especially when you can talk to a parent about how their student or their child has improved just within a couple of days. So I gave one parent a phone call, told them about their parent, about what they were doing in class and how they were holding themselves. The parent was just really, really proud to hear it. And they put us, he actually put our conversation on speakerphone so his son could hear it.
Yeah, nice.
So very proud of the young man, making good decisions, got there and one of the first to get in the class. So positive, making phone calls. I try and make phone calls on my way home, put it on loud speaker, talk to them as I'm singing. And it's so great because I had one parent who welcomed the feedback, but at the same time simply said, oh, I'll see what I can do to help as well. And that's all you want. So positive, making phone calls. I think the other one that I think that needs to be try and reinforce, but or try and get it to the point where you create an atmosphere where the academic rigor continues irrespective if there's a distraction outside or if the door opens and someone comes in, where the kids just focus and keep going until they get asked to stop. That's the thing that I want to improve. That's one of my goals to improve that part.
The question for this week, it's, you know, following on a hot form recently for the last couple of weeks. 9 to 3, 5 days a week teaching. Hypothetically, obviously teachers do a lot more before and after, but let's work off 9 to 3. If we were to take the 5 day 9 to 3 and make it 4 days, 9 to 5, what are your thoughts going from 5 day working week to a 4 day working week, still teaching the same amount of hours?
Let's look at the positives. 3 day weekend.
Can't be bad.
Yep, must be a good thing. It's one of those things where, and there are studies around that thing that says the 3 day weekend is actually a lot of people a lot more relaxed and everybody's a lot more focused, whatever else. But the other part of the positive that I see in that is that in reality, a lot of these kids have to also prepare themselves for work, which is most jobs are 9 to 5, not 9 to 3. So they've got to still learn to overcome that fatigue in that last 2 hours after 3 o'clock. So that's one thing. But I think on the downside of it is it's trying to also convince teachers to work that extra 2 hours.
Teaching trigonometry, 4 p.m. on a Friday, which would have to happen. You know, which would happen. And that's what I initially in my mind, I was like, oh, we can just make it 9 to 3 teaching still, but then do all your data entry and contact the parents and stuff the last 2 hours. But it'd still have to be the same amount of teaching hours, wouldn't it? So I keep going back and forth in my mind, man. You're like, yeah, it's going to work. And then suddenly it's, nah, this is all too much. So it's, yeah, I don't know.
I'd actually like to see the studies done on that because I know there are countries or a country that has gone that way, not necessarily but they have just gone to 3 day weekends. I'd like to see the actual, whether or not it can be done on a grand scale here in Australia.
Who the source be? We want the Financial Times, the Australian Economics Economist. Okay, so look, I think starting in my mind, term two is always the hardest term, difficult, a lot of stuff going on. I think it might be a good time to look at reflective practice, what it is, how we do it, and some potential red flags that we could be, or teachers could be doing too much. For me, I think reflective practice is all about the teacher looking to continually grow and improve their practice over time. What about yourself?
Yeah, that's something that should be ongoing, irrespective of how old or how long you've been teaching. It just should be a practice, should be ingrained in you. Be prepared to modify, tweak, change, alter, do whatever word you want to use, just to make sure that you are up to date with the latest way of doing it, or that you're using the old school and the new school to be more appropriate to the kids of today. Kids of today to kids of yesteryears, totally different. What used to happen before, kids were more strict, the parents were more strict.
It's a different time back then.
I see the kids adapted to that style of teaching. I think what's happening is that there's the old school that are still trying to teach the old school ways, which is tried and true, but the kids aren't the same. So it's trying to adapt that as well.
Well, they say that, don't they? Teaching is a reflection of society. And I think definitely with social media technology these days, it gets, everything grows almost exponentially compared to where you could kind of, I found, you could be on to change at one point in teaching. Now just everything going on, you're like, whoa. And that's just where society's at. Everything growing at a certain pace with the technology available. Okay, so we're going to the benefits of reflective practices. Yeah, I mean, I think it, for me, it allows us to adjust and respond to any issues that may come up. You know, I think we've touched on previous episodes talking about it's important to set up your foundations at the start of the year strong and make sure you've got a process there. So all you have to do for the remainder of the year is obviously tweak or maintain and then tweak at certain times. I think knowing early on and reflecting on those practices, knowing where things are going well and things aren't going so well, I think that sets up for a more successful long-term picture.
And I know we've mentioned this on other episodes as well. The other one is also resetting that reset button, or if a kid is playing up, that you reset it. And you sometimes have to, as teachers evolve, you've got to learn that what happened yesterday doesn't necessarily mean that you have to continue it on and have that same feeling. So today it was, for example, reset the button on a couple of kids, welcomed them in, sat down, worked with them one-on-one, got them going, and then all of a sudden I didn't hear boo from these two boys right to the end of the session. And I said, oh, how was it, boys? He goes, oh, sir, it's real easy. So it's that whole having to pick your battles, but reset the button and go again.
Yeah.
Go again. Keep going. And don't give up on the kid. It's one of those things where sometimes we say it in our heads that, oh, man. But it could just be one key that could unlock them as well. Just one thing. It could be one bit of a success that goes, wow, this is easy. And all of a sudden it just could go bang. And it could go, wow, this is so good. I'm going to keep doing this and that. So don't give up on a kid. Just never know. You could be that one key that unlocks that lock that goes to the kid. Wow, this is cool.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely helps promote a positive learning environment. Mm. I think, and that's, in my mind, that's still one of the key elements in teaching. I think that's when you know you've got that, the learning, really that deeper learning, when you've got that positive environment set up. But it takes time, especially, I mean, it's different if you've been to school for a while and you start to see kids or you've taught them from 1 year to the next. But when you start anywhere new, I mean, you don't know anyone. So you go in and then try to find out. It can be interesting. Okay, so let's look at the tools and practices we've used over our time to be a reflective teacher. For me, the first one was Dillard journaling when I first started. Not crazy, I had a few prompt or bullet points to work off to start with, but I was working in the country at the time, so it wasn't a heap of support around. I found it helped me sort of keep my mind on track with stuff and just sort of, you know, a lot of stuff's building up in your first year. If you can write it down, it helps sort of funnel your thoughts through in a process in a way.
In my early years of teaching, one of the big things we had to do was you had to have lesson plans written out for every lesson that you're going to do.
2 minute intervals, eh?
And you break it down to certain points. And the cool thing was that for every sort of, let's say, objective or learning outcome that you wanted a kid to learn, I made sure I had 3 activities per learning outcome. So no matter what, they're going to get it 3 different ways. And you might have 4 outcomes that you want in total. So that's 12 different types of learning opportunities that you have to try and break it through to these kids. So I found that reflective practices is try and be over-prepared. Better to be over-prepared than under-prepared. And the other one is surround yourself by experienced teachers. Get yourself involved, introduce yourself, lean on people, ask people questions that have been in the game and how, you know, well, what do you think about this one or what do you think about that? Sometimes you may come across as, you know, asking too much, but at the end of the day, if it helps the kid, do what you need to do to try and make it so the kid can go from A to B, B to C.
Debriefing with other staff members. I know we're big on it, working next to each other in the office, which makes it handy, but I think there's a lot of power in it, sort of have informal conversations with colleagues. I think it can go both ways, which I'll get to in a second. But I think, I mean, obviously, we both believe in humour is a big thing. I think being able to sort of, in teaching, especially where so much is happening at one time, be able to sort of laugh at yourself and not take yourself too seriously, but at the same time, use that humour to sort of build on where you want to go or platform where you want to go.
Yeah.
Can help as well. On the flip side of that, you want to make sure you know, in teaching most people, I mean, I've come across the good characters, you know, but you want to make sure you trust in the people you're saying, you don't want to be the person that's always getting critiqued and the others can't take criticism or constructive feedback in a way.
Yeah, it is so true. Like, there's a balance, and you've got to create that atmosphere to have that balance where you've got humour involved, but then at the same time you've got your professional side, making sure you're meeting these requirements. And as you say, debriefing, it could be as small as just us having a conversation like this. It could be us sitting in a circle and just talking about what's going on. So whichever format it takes, it's good. At the end of the day, as long as we're open communicators and we're saying this is what's happening or this has went wrong or whatever else, it's a good thing, because if you can create an atmosphere in your department that says we are reflective, then you can bring up any sort of things. A teacher might go, oh, I don't know how to teach this one to this year group. And another teacher might go, well, I tried this. And that's what it is. It's just bouncing ideas off one another, using our own expertise within the room to try and help both the staff, but more so the students.
Because you do, you build on the idea, you're right, you build on the idea. Someone says something, then it tweaks a thought in your mind, and you build on that, yeah. And you can get to a point. Yeah, peer observation. As a reflective process, what's your thoughts? Do you like being observed or being the observer?
I love both.
What's your techniques to being, or what do you think is important when you're observing someone and giving feedback?
I think just maybe if the person who's been observed have got areas that they want to be observed in, then look for those areas. If you're doing a generalized one, just go on what went well and highlight and emphasize what went well. But then if you notice there were things that they could tweak to go to improve both the practice for the teacher and the outcomes for the student, then say, oh, look, this is what I think you could have done better in. And bring it across in a way that it's more reflective, and it's not to tear them down, but to actually say, if you do this, this will actually make it better for you, or it will help sharpen up the kids or whatever else. So the main thing is welcome it. Don't hide from it. I know a lot of young staff at points, or even some of the older staff, they used to hide away from wanting to be observed. But as we've spoken,
it's a fear, isn't it?
Yeah. Iron sharpens iron, bro. It's one of those. And it keeps you sharp as well, which is.
Yeah. But again, I think to, like we do with the students, to overcome fear, I mean, you make sure you're just being professional if you're the observer. And you're not, you know, you can get a read of the person as well. Generally, people that ask you to observe them is you know them at some point. You've established some relationship with them.
Yep.
There's a trust there.
And if they do generally ask you to observe them, they regard you to have good practice. And like they're looking at the way that you obviously practice or that they know of you. I remember going out and watching a teacher teach, and I'll just stand and watch from a distance. And the cool thing was is that you try not to make it so it's obvious that you're observing, but then when you come back and have a conversation like this, you can just say, oh, this is what I saw, this is what I thought went well. Really emphasize the good stuff, because then that stuff they'll continue doing. And just when you do have ideas to add in, just say, hey, try this one might help you. And if they do, great. And if they don't, that's okay. It's just constant reflection over
and
over.
And then the last one, the big instrument in reflective practice, obviously professional learning. Look, I'm all for it. And I think you can go overboard with it. I think a couple per year is enough normally, depending where you are on your teaching journey. I definitely prefer more online these days. I think it's incredible how much the courses out there online, but the price they're at, usually pretty cheap, and for the amount of debt they get out of it.
Sometimes going to a professional development with other staff members, sometimes there is value in it, especially if it's something that aligns with yourself and the way or the pathway that you want to head towards.
Yep.
That's a positive. But sometimes there are certain things that you go to a PD with, and some of it's not relevant to what you're up to or what you're doing, but you just have to grin and bear and sit there and see your way through it. So what I would say is, try and choose specific PDs that are specific for your current situation and moving forward. Like if you want to become deputy or a principal, start aligning your PDs with something like that. Start learning things like that. Don't just do the other ones that have got nothing to do with it. So, yeah.
Keep it focused. It comes back to the goal setting and processes, doesn't it? Red flags, what can be some disadvantages of the reflection process? It can get time consuming. I mean, I said it before, it's definitely when I started teaching, I went too in depth with it. Sorry, with my reflection on myself. Mm. You don't want to pull yourself apart either. I think it's just sort of balancing out where you can. And it doesn't need to be just a point here and there. I think it's enough to sort of keep you on the right track.
That's it. Don't be too hard on yourself. I think half the battle is already won because you've shown interest in wanting to teach kids.
Yep.
Wanting to make changes in kids' lives. That's half the... Be grateful for the fact that you have put yourself into a position by where you have the ability to mould kids' minds.
Mm-hmm.
That's one. So don't be too hard on yourself. And the more you do it, like we all know, the better you become at it. It may not happen straight away. It may not even happen within a month or two. But the thing is, as long as it is making an attempt, a true, honest attempt, to be reflective on your practice to improve. What's the benefits? You become a better teacher. Benefits, the kids get better outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
Benefits, it's a win-win situation. So, yeah.
Could be in isolation. I'll put isolation down. Mm. I mean, I don't imagine people sitting there for hours on end in a room somewhere typing away. Maybe they are on a MacBook or something. But I think you just want to, keep it relevant time-wise. Not go too crazy with it. And the final point, what's our process? We've done the reflective processes. We've gone through the benefits. We're working through it for a reason. How do we use that data or that information coming back to us to integrate it? What do I get? I definitely use it. If it, say I was looking at a tricky student, for me, there's been a situation that occurs that's been ongoing or consistent situation. I then look at that and sort of how I've tried different strategies. What's the outcome for me in those strategies? What I've done to improve those strategies, and whether it's working or not, and whether the time effectiveness balance is there. Am I putting too much time into this one strategy? It's not getting a payoff.
Mm.
How can I be more time efficient or effective?
I suppose that's a good reflective thing to look at, the processes that you do, i.e. if you're dealing with behaviour. I suppose everything is taken on its own merits in a sense on how the situation presents itself, on what are the other factors that cause that to happen. Could it have easily been nullified or rectified or altered based on if this element wasn't there? So I think we are constantly taking into account all of the other factors. Main thing is that if you're working in the direction that is the best outcome for the student and for you as a reflective teacher.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing.
Yeah, that'll be my next point. Bring everything back to your goal and where you want to work with.
Mm.
Where are we going with this? What are we going to do with it? Where do we see the benefits being? And I think on that as well, like, it's don't be afraid to do a trial and error approach.
Correct.
This is working, this is not working. What can we do? How can we make it appropriate?
Absolutely. That trial and error, if anything, that's been reflective ever since day dot.
it's incredible, especially if I'm being a math teacher, you have all these formulas and processes out there. For me, maybe I'm just nuts. The trial and error is probably most effective. But it takes having the guts to keep trialing different things and then not letting failure hold you back,
correct,
which can be daunting.
As I said, I thank you earlier. I've tweaked Pythag, in my opinion.
I think you've changed Pythag, in my opinion. You are Pythag now, Mr. Pythag.
So the kids can get it irrespective of what side they're looking for. And it's so neat because I was just mentally saying it in my head, and they had to figure out what side and what formula. I should have seen some of these kids, man. They were rattling off, oh, this is it, it's this. And I said, how do you know that? They said, oh, well, so you didn't have the long side. So what's the formula? Oh, it's this. So I think once they overcome getting that formula and knowing which formula to apply, everything else will just fall back into place. So hopefully the results will show.
Mate, you're teaching math now. No, you're teaching math, but now you're changing formulas and changing age-old traditions.
Yeah.
Okay, so concluding remarks on the importance of the self-reflective practices for teaching.
Oh, never ending. You'll do it every day, every week, every month, every term, every semester. It's something that we do all the time. Because as time progresses, we age. And as we age, we reflect on, well, this didn't work well. And then as we get older and older in our careers, like I'm pushing up now, I'm doing things that I'm finding, if I establish it well here, then I don't need to revisit it anymore. So it's one of those things that it's all about working smarter.
Mm-hmm.
It's working smarter to get the best outcomes possible.
Mm-hmm.
And try not to take up too much of the learning time. Let the kids have enough time to play with it and find out for themselves what went wrong, and then come back in and refocus them or realign them, let them have another go. And it's one of those things. Just, it's a constant thing we're just constantly doing. So keep going. Don't ever give up. To whoever's out there, just reflect on everything. But don't be too hard. Don't go, oh, I don't like this teaching thing because my kids didn't. It's going to happen. Sometimes kids just don't get it sometimes.
That's my thing, man. It's just part of being a professional. Every profession does it. Self-reflection gets you, I think, to growth the fastest. Like always, thank you for listening. We appreciate your support and we look forward to the next episode.
Thank you.